I can hear you, fuckers. All right, it all comes out now. The truth comes out, you bag of bastards. What a pile of fuckers. Oh, my God.
Bag of bastards.
What a pile of fuckers.
Pile of fuckers.
Welcome to another edition of the Know My Podcast. I'm Mitch Maxine. If you've got any comments or questions, as always, send them to my Know My Podcast Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, or drop an email to knowmypodcast2021@gmail.com. Good God in heaven, I can't believe we finally got it going. Hey guys, welcome. Everybody just jump in and say hello.
Hello.
There you go. All right. Oh, that's right. It's almost Christmas. Holy cow.
Oh my, is that the last episode before Christmas?
This is our last episode. Yes, this is the last episode. This is going to be airing on the 27th. So this is the last episode of 2022.
Hark the herald angels sing.
Oh, God. I want to get going on this topic tonight. I'm really looking forward to this one. The topic tonight, it's one we've bumped up against a few times over the months and the last, I can almost say over the years, that we've been doing the podcast. And the overarching topic is aging in the martial arts and all that brings with it, the concerns, the realities, how it impacts our training and all that sort of stuff. Before we get on to the topic, let's run around the table once and say hi to everybody. Lenny, how you doing, buddy?
How you doing, Mitch? And congratulations on another great year. You're coming to the end of one.
Yeah, it's a big deal. It's the end of 2022. I'm amazed that we continue to do this.
And we haven't been put off the air.
Well, yeah, they're going to kick us off Spotify. But I'm sure if they do, someone else would be jockeying to be our platform before long. It'll be fine. Darren, how are you, man?
I'm excellent. I echo Lenny's sentiments about the podcast in general. But I have to admit, this particular topic, I wish I knew more about it, but I just, I don't
getting
know.
Getting old? Yes. Yeah, you spring.
I don't know anything about aging students or having to do any of that kind of stuff yet. I'm going to have to listen to my peers on this one.
And Bob, hey Bob, how you doing?
It's been a long time. Has it been like 2 months or so since the last episode? We're getting constantly older as these things go on, so It's increasingly wearing on my consciousness that we're going to be dead soon. So let's get this episode over with, shall we?
All right. So like I said, folks, the overarching topic is aging in the martial arts. So let's just go around the table once with the first talking point, which is how's everybody dealing with the fact that the inescapable crawl toward death is starting to be more visibly inevitable? And in broad terms, how are you, I'm going to go last because I'm going to go on for about an hour about this, but how are you dealing with getting older in the scope of your training and your teaching? Lenny, you're the most invested, so what do you got?
It actually inspires me to explore new ways to keep in shape, mainly flexibility and mobility. Everything else that comes with the fitness side of it. But I mean, I'm invested nearly 6 days a week in training, so I have to keep it somewhat in shape as best I can. I have noticed that my hip mobility and leg mobility is starting to change a bit. So I've been working a lot on just re-exploring stretches I used to do that maybe fell by the wayside, and focusing a hell of a lot more on trying to keep in shape. So yeah, for me, obviously it's my livelihood. I can't just say, I'm not going to train anymore, because if I don't do it, I don't have a roof over my head. So
okay, but that brings up an interesting question. How much do you equate ability or being able to do the stuff with being able to teach the stuff? Aren't those two separate things?
You're not teaching it properly if you can't do it.
Lenny, what happens if you get, I don't know, the flesh-eating virus and your right foot gets amputated? Are you saying you would give up the club and stop teaching because you can't do some of the techniques anymore?
I think I said it before. If I make sure that those coming behind me are of the same standard that I would expect myself to be training at. So if I hit a point that I can't effectively demonstrate, I have kind of an assistant or second in command, whatever, say, well, listen, this is the way you do it. And the younger person steps up and demonstrates it with me talking through it and so on. So it's kind
okay,
of,
but
it becomes
a second,
a double act.
But a second ago you had said, and pardon me pointing this out,
yeah,
you had
you
said,
can't teach it.
You can't do it, you can't teach it. So that's yes. not necessarily
well,
so.
I was actually coming to say, but when you can't teach it properly, that's when you've got to help get people to help you to effectively get the point and the technique across. Because it's the only logical way to do it. Otherwise, you, oh, okay, what you were saying is right. You just, okay, that's time to jack it in altogether. It's time to call time. But why should you do that when you can still effectively get the teachings across using more than one person?
Teaching largely is being able to explain well, but you need to have some sort of visual reference. It's one thing to be able to explain the nuance of a technique, but humans are very visual creatures. So to hear something is one thing, to see it is something else. So I agree that you need somebody there who can competently demonstrate what you're trying to get across. Darren, what do you think? Any comments on this?
I agree with both sides, obviously. Like it's good if you can sit there and demonstrate it, that's fine. If you can, I mean, most coaches that you see that train martial artists and fighters and stuff are too old to do the stuff themselves or like way out of shape. Their job is just to coach you and teach you. So it obviously can be done, but they probably have someone that's showing the person if they can't demonstrate it themselves. I mean, a lot of stuff, you can demonstrate it to enough of a degree visually that they should be able to figure it out. So maybe you're not kicking to the head, but you might be able to demonstrate a side kick to the knee and tell the person they just have to move it up higher or something like that. So I still think you can still do the visuals despite age, up to a certain extent, obviously.
Coaches who coach fighters on any professional or semi-professional level, that's very often one-on-one coaching, but the training that I'm used to and that Lenny's used to is class-based. And I think it's easier to be able to coach somebody without you being able to do it when you're doing it one-on-one, because you can walk up to the individual you're doing and you're saying, no, put your arm here or put your leg here or do this or do that. And that's good much point. Easier to illustrate one-on-one than it is to an entire class when you're not able to actually do the technique. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I'd run with that.
Yeah, and I think the one-on-one coaching, those guys that'll be training for fights, normally they'd be in a class setting until they're, say, into the six-week training camp, and that's when it starts to become more of a one-on-one thing. But normally they would be in a class setting as well.
And shocking, but we've drifted a little bit. Len, because this is this was the first go-around about how you're doing about getting older.
Yeah,
so,
that's true.
Sorry, Len. Anything else to say about how your own personal demons are being corralled in terms of your getting older?
I'll hold my hands up and say I don't have the demons because, as I said, Clint Eastwood was asked on his 90th birthday, what are you doing tomorrow? He says, I'm making a new movie. And a guy said to him, where do you get the motivation from? You're 90. And he goes, well, when I get up in the morning, he says, I don't let the old man in the door. And that's, I wake up every day like that. And, you know, I'm 51 now and I go, I don't feel it. And I'm 15,
okay.
Like, you know.
51?
Yeah,
God
money kid.
Damn.
Infant.
So, I mean, for me, it's a lot of it is mental approach. I'll nail my colors to the mast on that one.
Just to explore that a little bit, because I remember when I was 50, 10 years ago, I was in very much the same mindset. And frankly, I was shocked by how steep a drop-off 50 to 60 was. Because at 50, I felt like I did at 40 and like I did at 35.
Right.
At 60, I don't feel like I felt at 50. Like, it to me, for my own experience, that was quite a sharp decline between 50 and 60. So, Len, looking at how you are now at 50, how do you feel relative to when you were 30 or 35?
Not a hell of a lot different. In fact, sometimes I feel a bit fresher because when I was back in my 30s, I was working shift work with the emergency services here. So I was in a constant state of jet lag, whereas now I'm going to look after myself a hell of a lot more than I did then. So,
well, you have no place on this podcast. Bye-bye. Bob, what do you think?
Oh, man. First of all, I'm in a privileged position in that I'm not in it anymore. I'm way off in the back stages on the left side of the scene, looking on at you guys who are active, still active in this. talking about it. So it's an unfair perspective that I have. But at the same time, one of the reasons I retired from the whole scene was that I came to think about how much my training was contributing to my development as a, you know, physically. And there's a law of diminishing returns. The more, like, I could put in 5 years more training and get almost zero returns from it as far as increased ability. I know that that's taken into account. You know, this master is 70 years old, but he's bypassed the regimen, I don't know what it's called, God damn it! Sorry, resetting.
Bob's aging is affecting him mentally, not physically.
Fuck you! But anyway.
Bob's got a little extender on his chin to pluck out the numbers on the keyboard because he can't.
No!
Okay, Bob, you've retired from martial arts training, but you're still physical. You still work out. So how?
But that's why. That's kind of why. Techniques meant everything to me, and then they stopped meaning everything to me because they didn't produce results in my development anymore. I could think about a technique and how to do it, and if I thought well enough about it, it would result in my techniques being better. And that, of course, isn't happening anymore because of my age. So there was a whole, why am I trying to improve my technique when I'm not going to improve physically? And that's a line that everybody here presumably has come across, except Lenny, who's immortal and will continue developing until he's 1,000 years old. But for me, all I can speak is for myself, and that's kind of where I am.
So, okay, Bob, is it fair to say, because you retired, what, a decade ago, if not longer? Yeah, but probably about 15 years ago now, because you retired in line with when the business kind of took off.
I just remember being in kendo, starting kendo, and saying, you know, I'm a half a century old to the person who interviewed me.
Okay, so about 12 years ago. Fair enough. Darren, what do you think? Just overriding comments about, you know, how you doing in terms of your aging relative to your training.
I got a couple points. One, I remember if you equate it to, like, say, weight training, and actually it applies to martial arts as well, but I suppose it applies to both. But, you know, when you just start off and you do a class or you do a weightlifting session and the next day you're all stiff and sore, then you think, okay, well, that's because I'm out of shape. And then once I get in shape, I won't be stiff and sore anymore. But it doesn't work like that, because the more in shape you get, the more you put into the workout. So you're always kind of walking around stiff and sore. So I'm so used to, like, however many decades of that feeling, that if I am stiff and sore due to age, it's just the same stiff and soreness that I seem to have always felt anytime I trained. So I don't, like, obviously you notice your techniques are slower. People that you think you should be able to beat, they're scoring points on you because you just, your reflexes aren't the same and stuff like that. That stuff's noticeable, but it doesn't really bother me because there's always been someone better than me anyway. So again, if someone's beating you, you're also used to that. So I don't actually feel any kind of demise in that sense, because the pain's always been there and there's always someone to beat you. So I don't feel like I'm getting worse and worse.
Darren, fuck you with your healthy perspective, okay? Just take it off.
I'm still depressed, don't get me wrong. But I think the other thing is you kind of tailor your training. Like, you hear UFC guys a lot going, I train smart now. And you just don't train the same way you did before. But it doesn't mean you can't. And as far as dealing with it, for the most part, it doesn't bother me. There'll be some times when you go to do a bit of grappling and your knees are really sore and you can't do certain things, or you can't stay in certain positions very long because it just aches. And if you are in a position for too long and you go to stand up, your knees hurt and stuff like that. But it just means I don't do as much grappling. It's as simple as that. So there's other arts and other ways of training that, because you're always going to learn something, so you can just switch to some other aspect of the training that keeps you motivated.
Yeah, to leverage off what Darren was saying, Bob and I trained in judo pretty heavily for quite a while. Bob got his black belt, and I think I got to blue. Yeah, I got to blue belt. But we trained a lot, and when we started our own club, we did a lot of training in judo. And my back just wouldn't have it anymore. I threw my back out, and it long story short, it caused me to retire from ever doing judo again, which was a hard pill to swallow, because I love judo. To this day, I just sit and watch judo clips and lament the fact that I started so late in judo and never went as far as I wanted to go. But that's more injury related than age related. Like I said earlier, when I was talking to Len, I noticed a really rapid decline from 50 to 60, and especially from, I would go 54, 55 to 60. The last 5 years have been tough. My knees are shot. My shoulders are a mess. But like Darren said, you amend what you do. Your expectations have to change. You can't expect to do at 60 what you did at 30. But I think a trap a lot of people fall into is to say, I can't do what I did then, so I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to retire physically. And there are a lot of people I could name who are like that.
Hey, shut up.
I don't know why I found that funny. You didn't retire out of a sense of inability. Your reasons for retiring were different, and you went over them a couple of minutes ago. It had nothing to do with you. Oh, actually, it had everything to do with you getting older, the law of diminishing returns and all that stuff. I'd like to explore that later, Bob, because frankly, what you were talking about made no sense to me. But just to finish the point, I see a lot of people stepping away and retiring and not training anymore, and especially instructors, more because they don't feel that they're able to do what they could do 20 years ago. So they say, what's the point in doing anything? I don't get that. Because the only arena that matters in is a competitive or comparative arena.
Yeah, I'll jump in on that whenever you want.
Go.
Why quit? It's not because I can't be competitive. It's because there's not much to think about anymore. I get off on being obsessed on a specific thing in every phase of my life, and I've been obsessed with martial arts for goddamn, I don't know how many decades.
I'm going to step in here and say, I'm just going to say Bob's right. He'll get a stink in his nose about something. And
stink in my nose? That's the wrong phrase.
It's the exact right phrase. He will lose his shit about that topic. For it could last a month, 2 months, 6 months, a year, 20 years, and he is completely absorbed with it. And then, like a light switch to me, it's just, I don't want to do that anymore. I'm done with it. And off he goes to the next thing, which isn't a bad thing. It gives you a very broad experience. But Bob, I'm going to challenge what you said, or what I think you said, because correct me if I'm wrong. What you alluded to was part of your attraction to the martial arts was the intellectualization of it and learning about the techniques and all that stuff.
Yep.
In that framework, why lift weights? Because weightlifting is got to be one of the most mindless. And I've been doing it since I was 18. So I know what I'm talking about. Weightlifting isn't exactly the most intellectually challenging endeavor, yet you do that relentlessly. So I'm wondering how that fits into your framework.
All right. It's a totally irrelevant topic, but now that we're on it, one doesn't think about it, but one thinks about it in a sense. It's not an intellectual thing, but you think about it. Like, it's in your thoughts and in a different way from the martial arts. I'm a teacher in the martial arts, and this is kind of cool. I'm thinking about my martial arts career. I'm in it. I'm putting myself in that place right now, so My eyes are closed, and I'm going back in the Wayback Machine.
I love it when Bob narrates his thought process.
I know you do, and that's why I'm doing it. I'm in a martial arts class, and my intellect is taken up in my spare time with what went on in that class and how to improve and what techniques are and what it's all about. But at the same time, I'm like 62 fucking years old and I'm not doing it anymore. So what am I going to do? Mitch, this is a stupid story. Mitch, he didn't coerce me. He convinced me to go to a gym. How many years ago? Five.
Yeah, I said, six. Hey, Bob, let's go to a gym. That's me convincing Bob.
That was just me lying in bed one day and realizing that I'm not doing any martial arts because I had retired from all that shit, all that stuff, all that great stuff, and realizing that I had to do something because this was ridiculous and I was going to die of a heart attack. And that was just me taking up weightlifting because Mitch was so enthusiastic about it. That's all that says. This is all a side episode that should not even be on the podcast. So don't even, not even record this.
Okay, I'm just going to throw. I'm just going to throw a quick
perspective
on what Bob's talking about. I agree with him. Martial arts is a very intellectual process because you think about what you're doing. Almost exclusively, like, how can I do this better? Here's what I'm trying to accomplish, and what's my intellectual path that my physicality will follow to get me where I want to be. Weightlifting allows me to think better. When I'm physically challenged and I'm not thinking about stuff, like they used to say, heavy levels of exercise allows you to reach, forgive the use of the phrase, but a higher level of consciousness. I believe that. I believe that being overtly physical without having to think too much about what you're doing opens up your mind to be able to move beyond where maybe you wouldn't have been able to be had you not engaged in that physical activity. That's why I lift weights. Okay, so there's the first 30 minutes talking about...
And you haven't got Mitch and Darren's perspective on the...
Oh, we did. Part. We talked to Darren. Everybody had their say. So let's jump to the second talking point. Oh, my God. To what degree is it okay to amend or change how you do techniques relative to your diminishing ability? And let's deal with that first. So we're talking, obviously, about stylistic things and like the way you used to do a particular technique when you were 20 or 25 or 30 and your physicality just won't allow you to do that anymore. How much is it acceptable to amend or change the techniques or alter the moves in the kata to accommodate your lack of ability due to your age? Darren.
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, if you take the fundamentals of kata or the reasoning behind it, it's basically just to kind of practice the moves. So, I mean, as long as you're doing it, I don't think it's that important to do them the way it was in the book or it's been handed down to you. Just by the sheer notion that it's handed by somebody that did it a certain way, maybe you can't do it that way. To certain accounts, maybe you can do it better. Do you know what I mean? Like someone hands a kata that was designed 200 years ago, they didn't have the same athleticism as people do now. So you can actually make the kata better. And I know that's not the same topic, but I don't think it's a problem to change it. And I think as long as you're doing the kata, you're kind of doing it for what it was designed to do. If you're not able to do them a certain way, that doesn't mean you can't practice them.
There's almost an argument to be made that as you get older, you only have two choices. You either amend the kata to what your physicality allows, or you stop doing the kata.
Yeah,
there are moves in some of the kata that I could specifically name that I simply am not able to do anymore. For instance, it doesn't matter. There's a particular kata at blue belt level in our style where you drop down onto where the technique has you drop down onto your right knee, but it's not supposed to come any closer than an inch to the floor. So you're not actually putting your weight on the floor. You're dropping down and you're doing a particular hand technique, but your right knee is bent almost to touching the floor. I simply am not able to do that anymore. So when I do that technique, the knee is much higher. I still do the proper hand technique. The stance is the proper width and all that stuff. I just can't drop my knee that low anymore. So I honestly believe that with the kata, you don't have a choice. You either amend, you either alter the movement in the kata to suit what you can do, or you say, that's not valid, therefore I will never do the kata again. Lenny, what do you think?
Can't really answer because I haven't hit that problem yet.
Okay, I'll tell you what, Len. Imagine someone comes over to your house and blows your knee out with a gun. Like,
we talked about, you know, stylistic evolution and how you're teaching your proper style if you change things. The only reason I would purposely change techniques and so on would be to make them more practical. I don't think I would like to change them purely because I wasn't able to do them.
Lenny, I really hope we have this conversation again in 10 years.
That was our next point. There's something wrong with the Maxine brothers interrupting people tonight. Anyway.
Well, for one of us, it's our podcast, so we can interrupt anyone we goddamn want to.
It's mine.
I'm taking my podcast and going home. All right, Len.
Remember.
Sorry,
I didn't remember what my point was.
I didn't mean to interrupt, Len. Please carry on.
I was going to say, obviously, there will come a time that's going to happen, and I don't know what way I'm going to deal with that because, for me, if I'm not teaching it right, it's going to, Jesus, how it's a big crisis of conscience because it has to be done correctly, and I don't believe in dissecting it or taking it apart just to suit my ability.
But there's a difference between practicing and teaching. You can teach it correctly, but practice it a different way. Do you think you're going to look down on your ability? You know what I mean? Like, you can teach it properly, even if you can't physically do it properly. But does that mean the way that you do it is less valid because it's not technically correct due to your physical limitations because of your age?
Yeah, you see, this is an interesting question because now my mind is going back to a video we watched way, way back in the podcasts about people with disabilities doing kata, and we trashed out whether is it acceptable to do that because it's the best they can do, or is it not acceptable? And
right, good point. Nice connection there.
And this is now, you know, you've really messed with my head.
And we're all eating a little bit of humble pie right now, I think, because we're
absolutely.
Oh shit. Time. What if I get my legs blown off? Does that mean I'm never going to do kata? I mean, for myself, yes, it would mean I'm not going to do kata again. But that's not the point. The point is, how far are you willing to negotiate how the techniques are done relative to your own physical ability as you age? That's a tough question.
Yeah, I think I would do them if I was practicing myself. Do them to the best of my ability, securing the knowledge that I know, okay, this should be better, it should be slightly different. But I don't think I would take to the floor to teach it without having the full capability and would get somebody down and say, listen, you got to take this because I'm not able anymore.
That's a tough row to hoe, especially for an instructor, because as you just said, Len, being able to do it but having to make excuses to your students because you can't do it, but trying to teach it to them, that's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah, it's like the pro hockey player, pro footballer. It's like, okay, no one. Do I do one more season or do I call it time? When in your head you know it's time, but in your heart you want to say, we'll just keep going.
But even more poignant in your case, well, not just you. I mean, like you said, you make a living off teaching the martial arts. So once you're not able to do the techniques anymore, does that signal the beginning of the end of your career as a martial arts instructor?
It depends on how well you can transfer your perspective. I'm not the best practitioner. I am the best enabler of practitioners. I can bring out the best in you without without you seeing the best in me, because that was 20 years ago.
It's funny that you're right, Bob. It's that for sure. But just hearkening back to what Len said a few minutes ago, his statement was he wouldn't feel wholly comfortable stepping in front of a class to teach, say, a kata, if he wasn't able to do the kata the way it should be done.
Better come to terms with that pretty soon, because that's the way it is. That, you really get old.
I'll tell you, sorry, just to, Len, I'm going to give this back to you in a second, but
yeah.
my own perspective on that, you can say that you should come to terms with this before it happens to you. You never will.
No, I get that, yeah.
Once you start to degenerate physically, as I certainly have done, you're forced into that corner, but it's not a corner you'll waltz into on your own happily before you have to. So it's a bridge everybody has to cross sooner or later. Len, I not admire, that's not the right word. I envy the fact that you haven't had to cross that bridge yet, and I do not envy you the path that is ahead, because I'm right in the middle of it. I'm right in the middle of, I'm still good enough that I can do some of the stuff, but I'm obviously not good enough anymore to do all of the stuff, and I'm having a real crisis of conscience about all that. Okay, Len, any other comments you want to throw in before we go to Darren?
No, I was just going to say, I was kind of clear-cutting my thought process at the start of this one, but you've kind of me really, as we always do on these podcasts, made me really rethink my standpoint on this. Because, as I said, throwing back to the video, people with disabilities, are they doing the cata right? Now we're looking at us going, okay, not saying we're going to be disabled, but we're going to lose ability.
Okay, well, here's another point then. How much responsibility do we as aging practitioners and instructors have to re-examine how things are done to minimize the aging impact on our students? Meaning, look, we do certain techniques that are obviously stressful on our bodies in certain ways. Do we have an inherent responsibility to maybe review how we do our techniques and say, you know what, the way we do that technique, that fucked my knees up. Maybe we shouldn't do that technique anymore. Maybe I can spare somebody some of the pain that I'm in now by altering how we do these techniques, so that when they come up through their aging process, maybe they're not going to be impacted quite as much as I was.
That's a fucking good question.
Thank you. So Bob, well, okay, Bob, so what do you think? Is that a responsibility of an instructor to evaluate the negative impact of the techniques on themselves and superimpose those changes on their students?
This is a great topic. This is a whole episode, because first of all, the old school people like we are, or were, or perhaps are not, would say, all right, this is the way you do the stance, and this is how deeply you hold the stance, and this is how you twist your feet outward in the stance, and you do it, and it may be physically torturous to you, but that's the way it's done, and fucking get over it, and that's how you become strong in this style. That's one. Two, all right. So we're not a Nazi anymore. Maybe not sit that deeply in your stance. Maybe make it a little more comfortable. And I don't mean comfortable in a pejorative sense. Maybe make it more suitable to your anatomy, and turn the feet outward a little more, because it's. I feel a lot of sympathy toward that attitude. Have a stance natural rather than torture yourself with the twistings inward and outward of various joints and ankles and things the way that horse stances, for example, you are told to do. What was the topic?
Oh, God.
Remind me.
The question is, how much responsibility do we as aging practitioners and instructors have to amend the techniques so the people who come up after us don't suffer the same debilitations that we do?
Wow. Okay, yes. So I'll start again.
Oh, dear.
No, I'm joking.
Honestly, Bob, what you did with that last 2 minute diatribe is frame the question, but you haven't answered it.
Oh man, my gut reaction, and I'm going to rely on that right now, is to go back on the I'm an old school person, and I'm going to go back on old school rules, and you do it this way, or you don't get ranked. And I really will die on this hill.
Darren, what do you think?
Yeah.
I think it depends on what the student wants and what their intentions are. Because even if you train right, if you're going for competition, you have to, just by the very nature of it, in order to be able to be the best, is to put your body through a lot of stuff. Like in any kind of athletic sport, whether it's martial arts or running, anything, you kind of have to put your body through something in order for it to get better or to another level. So by the very nature of that, you're going to do damage on your body. Like even people that have been jogging all their life, chances are their knees and hips are shot.
You know, Darren, you're absolutely right. And for a couple of years, I was obsessed with watching, not participating in, the Reebok CrossFit games. You look at some of the people who have retired from doing CrossFit, and they're a mess. Arms, yeah. That knees are shot, shoulders are wrecked, blah, 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 blah. And this harkens back to what Bob said as well. If you want to be the best at what you do, you're just going to have to accept that it's going to have an impact on your body as you get older. There's just no getting around that. But the question is, shouldn't we try to amend what we do without compromising the quality of what we do to minimize that impact on the body?
Yes, I agree,
Bob, go ahead. Because I agree with Darren. I think we do have that responsibility.
Who could possibly disagree with that?
You apparently.
You do what you can. Without damaging yourself.
Let me give you an example. Coming up through the ranks at Jushin, we were taught front stances, front foot turned in at a 35 or 40 degree angle.
And knee way bent.
And your knee, and that puts a huge amount of torque on your knee. That's how we were taught to do it. Do you really believe that our martial arts ability, education, and quality of that ability and education would have been compromised if we hadn't turned the foot quite so far in? Because I'm convinced that if we had just turned it in a weeny tiny bit, we wouldn't have the knee issues, or I wouldn't have the knee issues I have right now.
Yeah.
Not at all. I think that would have been a great policy.
And that's my point here, is I think techniques can be amended and changed to reduce or minimize the long-term impact on the body without compromising the quality of the training. Anyone else want to throw in? Len, what do you think? Should we be changing stuff?
I think, first and foremost, you have a duty of care to students. You know, health and safety, if you want to be the party learned. That being said, I mean, as you said, Mitch, you know, turning a foot a certain way, it's not going to compromise what you're doing, but it protects you even more. Like, somebody learns how to ski, they learn to snowplow to stop, but they go on to learn a different way to stop later on. Are they still skiing? Yeah. Have they compromised what they're doing? No, they're just doing it a slightly different way.
They're
still moving, they're still stopping. So I'm sure 20 years ago there were certain ways that, say, when mixed martial arts was only in its infancy, there were certain ways of fighting. Then people looked at it and said, no, let's try this, let's try that. And it evolves. So if it's not going to totally destroy what you're teaching, and it keeps, you know, principles still the same, I don't see the harm in changing anything to make it safer and effective.
But still
hearkening to the principles that you came from as best you can.
I've got to step in and make a delineation there, Len, because you're right. Over the evolution of MMA and the martial arts, people say, well, we got to change this, got to change that. I don't think I can remember anybody ever making a change in anything for any other reason other than it works better to do it this way. It's more practical to do it this way. Don't do a sidekick like this. Do it like this. It's more. It'll work better. It's more practical.
Yeah.
That is the popular reason for changing things. What I'm talking about is, let's not do it this way, because when you hit 60, your knees might not be fucked if we change it. That doesn't seem to be a very popular, or at least well-spoken of, perspective. I don't see a lot of styles or practitioners coming out and saying, you know what, I think we're going to change how we do this basic technique in our style, because if we keep doing it the way we do it traditionally, your knees are going to be screwed, or your shoulders are going to be screwed.
I think an interesting point that you brought up there, say, let's not do this when we're 60. Well, let's go back to when we were all taught that, of course. I don't think many people envisioned themselves still being that heavily involved as the years went by. I mean, it wasn't as popular then as it is now. So maybe because it's grown so much in popularity and people are taking it up at a later age and people are sticking with it longer, well, then it's even more important that we say, okay, we need to look at the physical side of this. Maybe it does need to change, because it's a whole different playing park now, because people are with it longer and older. Whereas back then they weren't.
But Darren made a good point earlier when he said, look, if you want to be good at this, if you want to be great at this, you have to throw yourself into it 100%, and that's going to cause some physical debilitation just on its own. That level of commitment brings with it an inherent risk of your body breaking down earlier than maybe it would have if you didn't throw yourself so emphatically into it. So again, maybe we need to delineate between, look, here's the group of people who want to be great. These are the people who want to rise to the top and they want to make this their life. And here's the other 98% of the people who just want to go out and work out on a Tuesday night. I don't think we need to condemn those people to having bad knees and bad hips and bad shoulders because of how the techniques are done. I don't see any downside to amending how techniques are done to make them less injurious to the body. I think you can work out just as hard and just as intensely. And I think Darren said it best, you work out smarter. You still work out harder. It's not smarter, not harder. It's smarter and harder. Like, you work out as hard as you can, but you work out in a smart way. You work out in a way that doesn't necessarily debilitate your body the way ours, or at least mine, maybe I'm looking at this from a far too broad perspective. Maybe I'm taking my own physical decline and projecting it on the whole world. Maybe I'm way off base here, but okay, I want to ask one more question. We're almost an hour in, so we're going to take a break in a second, but I want to ask this to Bob specifically, because he was such a pain in the ass in the...
Fuck you!
Notice how I paused, because I knew he was going to say that. I want to hearken back to the podcast we did on styles, where Bob was carrying the banner of, if you do any technique differently than your style... You shouldn't proclaim to teach that same style anymore. So to link this conversation to that, Bob, if I decide that I'm going to amend a particular technique because it's less injurious to the body to do the technique the way I want to do it, does that mean that I cannot proclaim to still teach that style? Because I've decided that some of the techniques are a little more physically harmful to the practitioner than they need to be.
That's an awesome question. Can you take a student who says, like a 15-year-old kid comes in and says, I'm looking into taking a martial art. Why should I take yours? And you say, look, this is what we teach. These are the parameters that we teach around it. Look, I'm 70 years old. I can only do this, and I can't do that. But I'll do the best I can. Come and learn from me for $30 a month or whatever the fuck it was 50 years ago. And I don't see the problem. Hello?
I'm going to go on a limb and say you didn't answer the question even a little bit.
Yeah, I didn't really listen. I did.
Good day editing this.
So let me take another run at this.
Oh my god.
I'm gonna go with a limb here. You can answer the question even a little bit.
I'm so laughing.
Okay.
And then Bob goes, yeah, I know.
Oh, I'll tell you what, guys, let's take a break. Bob, go have a nap. We'll wake you in an hour. Fucking hell. God damn it. All right, guys, let's take a break. We'll reconvene when everybody's back. All right, oh, fucking hell. Okay, folks, we're back from the break. Let's go on to the next talking point, which is, and how should we treat our aging students? So let's break this up into two categories. Let's talk about students who age while they're at the club and students who want to join who are a little older. So let's start with the easy one first, I think. What about students who come to the club and want to join and are, say, 60 years old? What should they be treated differently? Do we judge them differently in terms of their progress through? What do you think?
I think it boils down, like, I know we said this about other topics and stuff. Karate is supposed to be an individual thing. It's the better of one's own abilities. So it doesn't mean if you're aging, you might be overweight, you might be out of shape, you might have a disability of some sort. You're there to better yourself. So you're going to get treated better than the natural athlete that's probably going to go on and win tournaments all the time. You come in and you're older or you're larger or something like that, you're not going to win the tournaments all the time, but you can improve yourself. And I think that's really what it's all about. And we said that before. So I think it goes without saying, they are going to be not necessarily treated different, but you're not going to go and if their stance isn't low enough, you're not going to take a shin eye to their legs or go over and hoof one leg out to make them stretch more or something. So they will kind of get a bit of different treatment, I'd say. And technically, I don't think those old ways that we used to do that are... I was happy I went through it, but I don't think they're necessary. You know, I think you can be a great martial artist without having someone slap a shin eye across your leg because you're not low enough. You know what I mean? Just yelling at them and saying, get lower is enough.
Darren's point brings up a really interesting perspective. Let's take it to an extreme. Like Darren said, everybody should be judged on their own personal progress, not necessarily compared to other people. So your progress through the ranking system should be based on your own movement through, not compared to an objective standard. I'm gonna die on this hill. I disagree with that completely. I think someone who comes in at 60 should, the conversation should be, look, there are objective standards of technique that you're going to have to meet in order to move through the ranks. I can't look, the whole reason that there is a world of shitty martial artists out there is because people say, well, they're better than they were when they started. Yeah, that's great, but they still suck. So let's give them rank because they're better than they were. That's the slippery slope. That's the...
No, that was hence my sigh.
I know, it's like, it's a hard question.
Here's an example here. Like, I come the new year, like I'm kind of healing all my injuries, and I want to get back into training somewhere. So when I go to a new club, I am going to be the 60-year-old guy that's aging, that's starting at a new club. Am I going to be the same as the 20-year-olds? No. I'm going to be considerably less athletic than they are. But at the same time, I don't give a shit whether I get a rank.
That's the point, and that's the difference. Exactly. You're happy to learn. You're happy to be there, and and immerse yourself in the learning that's going on, and the rank is irrelevant, right?
Yeah, totally.
So the 60-year-old who walks into the dojo for the first time with no experience, my perspective would be, look, I'd love to have you here, and I stand and give you a standing ovation for your willingness and desire to come and learn, but there are some realities you're going to have to face, and one of them is, sorry, at this dojo, you're just not ever going to get a black belt. And if they
I think that's viable.
I do, too. I think that's the way to go. Len, what do you think?
Yeah, well, your last sentence there just kind of kicked off what I was going to open up with, and that's anyone walks through to my door, and I ask them, why are you here? And whether it be it just to stay in shape, whether it's to learn a bit of self-defense. Very, very rarely have I heard anyone say, I want to get a black belt. Ever. That's been honest with you. And then it becomes pretty apparent fairly quick whether they'll ever make that trip. And I spell it out, say, look, very few people make it this far. And even when I get young students who make it as far as brown belt, purple belt, brown belt, in our ranking structure, I tell them, this is where most people quit. Because to get to black is a huge, huge, huge challenge. And most of you probably won't get there. So I don't give them the expectation when they walk in the door, nor will I ever entertain the expectation that any new student, no matter what age they are, walks through the door, that their goal is to get the black belt. Their goal is to improve. If they make the black belt, brilliant. If they don't, sorry, not everybody makes it. It's a pedestal that not everybody achieves.
So, Lenny, if you had a 60-year-old come in, and maybe you have had a 60-year-old come in.
I've got a 66-year-old trains with me.
Is your expectation of their performance in class less than someone who's 30 or 25?
Of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Len. I appreciate the input.
Fuck you.
Bob the ventriloquist.
Because, look, the reason I asked the question, look, it sounds like, and Bob's right, it sounds like an obvious answer, but I would never say to a student, I expect less from you for any reason. I expect just as much from you as I do from anybody else. Now,
yeah, can I just, on that, Mitch?
Yeah, go ahead, Len, yeah.
If I think someone is slacking off and using their age as an excuse, I'll call them out on it.
Absolutely. Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough.
Well,
fair enough.
If I see a guy up there and he's busting his nut and, boy, he can't achieve. Like, I've got a guy trains me. He's actually Canadian, funny enough. And he's got severe flexibility and mobility issues. And he knows himself he'd never get beyond a certain standard. And the poor guy looks like he's contorted half the time. But he will come up and he will give 100% every time. But he has accepted that he will go as far as he'll go in the grading structure. But he'll never give less than 100%. So I got to give him kudos for that, and I'd never turn him away. So listen, you're not coming to training anymore because you won't make it any further.
Kudos to anybody who steps onto a martial arts floor for the first time, because it's a daunting thing. And more so maybe for people who are a little older, who understand that, you know, my back's bad, my knees are bad, whatever. I'm just this age, and that brings with it some realities that I might need to face. So that perspective should be applauded. Lenny, do you test based on personal growth, or do you promote based on objective ability? Or is it a mix of both?
It's a mix of both, I got to be honest. Absolutely. It's a simple answer for it.
It's, you know...
Because, no two individuals are the same. You can't just have this is the only way. There has to. And I think that's the only way you've managed to survive and have had a dojo that's been successful is that...
That's a tough.
It's a very tough question because
it is.
You know, it's where do you draw the line?
The problem is that when people get promoted through the ranks and especially into the black belt realm, who are not physically able, maybe it's a good thing for that person because they have improved within their scope of what is possible. They've moved through that plane and they're able to do what they can do at a level that's quite high for their own potential. So,
how do they say to themselves, I can do better? It's incumbent upon me to improve. What's the incentive for them to say, this shouldn't be the bottom for me?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that question.
Your point was, reiterate your point for me, and then I'll.
My point is that when you promote subjectively, if the individuals who are promoted to black belt do not meet an objective ability level, but they have progressed personally, that's great. But it reduces it wears away at the credibility of the rank of black belt, because they're just not up to speed. They're people who look in a window and watch someone working out wearing a black belt. They don't go, oh, well, that maybe that person is doing the best they can do for whatever challenges that individual has. They look and they go, holy shit, that sucks. And maybe sucks is the best that person can do. But look, I don't want to get too wrapped up in this. My belief is that objectivity and objective standards have to be a part of the grading process. And if it's not, it just wears away at the credibility of the whole process.
No argument here. I'm not sure where I had intended to draw the line before, but sorry about that. Erase that line. It's obvious.
I kind of go back and forth, and then when you make a good point, that sways me into that part of the argument. And I think when we talked about this before, we kind of came to the conclusion that if I wanted to be a doctor, I have to pass the doctor's exams to get my license to be a doctor. It's not that I did better than I did the year before or anything. You have to meet a certain criteria. It's just because you've improved in the martial arts doesn't automatically mean you have a black belt, because you do have to meet a certain criteria. So it's a tough pill to swallow to tell people, you know, you're not going to get a black belt here. Some people would think, okay, well, I can get it over here, so I'm going to leave, which would be stupid, but I'm sure there are people that do that as well. So I don't know. I see both ways. If you're operating as a business, you're there, you're kind of being personable, and you have to help the students along and better them and all that. And if it means giving them a rank, you give them a rank. But at the same time, there should be criteria. If you're not meeting it, you're not meeting it. It's nothing against the person. It's just, look, you're not meeting the criteria. Sorry. Simple as that. You haven't perfected the techniques to corporal level.
Now, I want to filter this through.
Here's another one. Sorry, just one last thing.
Yeah, please.
A lot of you talk about black belts being knowledge-based. By that same token that we've just said, if I'm no longer able to perform techniques at a black belt level, should I be demoted? Or once you get a belt, are you supposed to be? Because that's a tough one, too.
Oh, okay. Well, great.
Sorry,
thanks,
it's another
Darren.
Can of worms.
That's an awesome question. But
that is an awesome question.
Day.
No, that's let's deal with that right now.
I'm saying you shouldn't be demoted.
All right.
For the simple reason, if you've done your job right, and I bang on about this all the time, you've brought people through who can step into the mantle and teach what they can be your hands and feet, and you can be the voice. So no, you shouldn't be demoted.
Wow.
But Len, sorry, go ahead, guys.
If Bob walked through my door tomorrow and he turned around and said, I'm not wearing a black belt, I'd say, yes, you are. Just because he doesn't practice anymore and he's older, I don't care. He's done his time. It's like veterans from wars come in, thank you for your service.
Wait, Len, you're right. Veterans who come in and they go, thank you, sir, for your service, and they are appreciated, but they're not put in charge of, like, if they were a sergeant major or whatever their rank was, they're not put back in the front lines.
No, but what I'm saying is there's a level of respect there that you're not going to disrespect them to say you're not good enough anymore. Yes, for what they're doing, I absolutely agree. But if someone comes through the door who's dedicated a lifetime to martial arts, I think it's the height of disrespect to expect to demote them.
Shit. This is a tough question. That's a tough question, man. I really want to explore this. So, okay, just to frame the question so we all understand what we're talking about.
Yeah.
As we age and as our physical ability diminishes, what's the criteria for maintaining your rank? Or is there a criteria? Is there an argument to be made that as we age through our training, once we're not able to do what we used to be able to do to an objective level, should we be demoted?
All right. This is a direct metaphorical thing with the military. Once you're a general, and you commend so many people, and now you're not. You're a retired general. What does that do to your perceived rank and your real rank?
From my limited experience, people who are in the military, when they're introduced, my name is so-and-so, I am general retired. And they admit that they're not an active part of right. that process and that world anymore. They are accorded their rank, but they concede that they are retired from the responsibility and the accolades of that rank. God knows I know nothing about the military, so I may be way off base, but I think that the notion of, look, if someone walks in a dojo and I'm teaching and they're 87 years old and they can barely walk and they were a black belt at that club, would I require them to not wear a black belt? No. Would I let them teach a class? Probably not. Until I know more about them and how well they're able to understand what needs to go on, blah, blah. I think accommodation needs to be made for the fact that people get old and people forget and people can't do what they can do. And I think this blind allegiance to rank is by definition a bad thing.
Yeah, I agree. Lenny made a good point about the respect thing. But again, where do you draw that line? Like, I could have bust my ass for years and years and years and never actually went for a black belt grading. And then when I'm 60, do I lose my brown belt? Or did I gain respect because I trained for 20 years, I just didn't have a black belt? No, you probably have to go back and start again. Why is it just because you had a black belt, you don't have to go back?
That's the thing. There seems to be this blind allegiance to the notion of having a black belt. And I don't understand it. And Darren makes a brilliant point. If I was a brown belt and I retired for 10 years and I went back to a club, they're not going to go, oh, yeah, go ahead and wear your brown belt. They're going to go, no, you strap on a white belt and we'll see how you do.
I'd let him wear his brown belt and say, do the test again.
I would say, let's err on the side of, you haven't trained in 10 years? Throw a yellow belt or an orange belt on. Let's see how you do. Or, you know what?
Come in and work out in tracksuit.
Right. Wear a brown belt. I don't care what belt you wear, but once I get an understanding of your ability, I'm going to move you to whatever rank I think you're suitable to. Is that fair, Len? Or would you just let them train as a brown belt?
I'd let them, they could wear the brown belt, but they'd go under no illusions you would be testing that for that grade as soon as physically possible.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sorry. You're absolutely, obviously entitled to that perspective. I just don't see the difference other than bolstering someone's ego. If they come in, 10 years ago I was a brown belt. You're gonna have to do some pretty serious backflips and hoop jumping to convince me to let you wear a brown belt in class. Let's let you train for a week or two. Look, wear your brown belt, fine. Train for a couple of weeks, and then we'll have a serious conversation about where your rank needs to be. Just because someone achieves a certain rank, I don't think that they are or should be accorded that rank for the rest of their life. And I think that that applies to black belts as well. I don't understand this bowing and scraping at the altar of being a black belt. I don't get it.
Should Bob be stripped of his black belt?
If Bob walked into a dojo right now, that's a really fucking awful question, Lenny. Fuck you for asking.
You threw it out there.
Yeah,
man.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Out there.
Someone else say something. I have to. No, seriously, I have to think about that. Give me a minute. Go ahead, Len or Darren.
My thing is, okay, it's a hard decision for a club owner or somebody to make. I think if you've actually trained through the years up to a level of black belt, sorry, my microphone was up. If you've put in the time and you've got up to a level of black belt, then you should be humble and you should be aware of your stance in life and everything. So you should know yourself whether you're up to those standards. And if you should be the one saying, look, I was a black belt. It's been 10 years since I trained. I will wear a white belt and you can tell me what you want me to wear as the classes go on. That should be the approach. If someone's actually reached that level, they should have no problem starting back and working their way up.
Well, and if they have a higher... I got to come in on that.
I'm just thinking, if you have a higher than thou attitude and say, "Oh, I got a black belt and that's what I'm wearing," it's like, well, then I don't know who taught you, but you're being a dickhead.
Okay, so that's talking about a guy who hasn't trained in 10 years. So I get the black belt level, and next week I have an accident, and I'm gonna be like, I can't kick totally right on one leg because something happened. In the space of a week, do I get stripped of a black belt?
These are difficult.
Yeah, look. Let's make the analogy to being a pilot, for instance. So I went through
someone's
whatever.
Life depends on that, though.
Well, not yes. If I'm flying myself.
Your life depends on it.
Yeah. The point being, look, if I'm able to do something, and then over the course of the next week, I'm no longer able to do it, should I still be accorded the titles and the accolades of someone who can do it? If I hold the world record for push-ups and my arms fall off in the next week and I can't do push-ups anymore, I shouldn't be looked at as somebody who can... yes, I accomplished it once. I can't do it again.
You're still a world record holder if somebody beats you, though.
Yeah, but you can't do it anymore. I don't know, man. I don't know. This is a tough one. I understand how difficult a question this is. I would like to err on the side of caution. And look, if I know, I don't even have to ask Bob, because I know for a fact, if he were to walk into a strange dojo or any dojo and say, "I want to start training again," he would not stand there with his arm crossed saying, I should be able to wear my black belt. I'm the same way. If I took a year off or 2 years off, I would not walk in expecting to be accorded the rank and the reputation, whatever the word you want to use, of being a black belt. Okay, I would surrender myself to the perspective of the instructor.
Can you do every technique expected to its absolute perfect capability, or can you do every kata as it should be?
You said of course.
No, then take off your black belt.
I've seriously considered that option. I'm not able to do it anymore. Do I really have a right to wear this belt?
Dude, there's a freedom. There's such a freedom in walking into a dojo and saying, "I don't know this," and walking into it with no belt and saying, "I'm a beginner."
You're right, but
I'm talking about losing the ability to do stuff. Not that.
Hang on a second. Wait, hang on. I just want to separate what we're talking about.
Yeah, okay.
Bob's
yeah.
right, but we're not talking about the attitude of the students. We're talking about the requirement of the instructor.
All right,
so if someone walks into a dojo, Lenny, let me ask you this: someone walks into a dojo, you've never met them before, you have no idea of their ability. And they say, "I've been a black belt and I got my black belt at such a club, but it's been 10 years. I'd like to come and work out and I think I should be allowed to wear a black belt." How would you address that?
First of all, if they said, "I think I should be allowed to wear a black belt," my alarm bells are off straight away, because as I said before in a previous podcast, the bullshit filter comes on fairly quick and you can get a handle on someone's personality and so on and so forth. I've had people that come in that were black belts in different styles, and they would say, "I've done a bit in other styles. Can I train?" "Yeah, what grade did you get to?" "Oh, well, it was a black belt." "Put your black belt on. We'll respect that grade as it was, and we'll see how you get on in our syllabus." If there's an ego comes with it, it's a different story.
Because okay, but let's take the ego question out for a second.
Okay.
Someone comes in and says, "Hey, blah, 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 I want to wear my black belt," and you say, "Great, wear your black belt." Would you ever say to that person, "Look, I've been watching you for the last month or two and you're just not up to speed. We're going to have to put you back to brown or blue."
Yep.
And that's my point. I think that's the right thing to do. I think automatically bowing at the altar of someone wearing a black belt is a mistake. And I think it leads to more harm than good. Yes, it can lead to some hurt feelings and some people getting butthurt over the fact that, "Hey, I was a black belt at Joe Blow's club. Why aren't you respecting my belt here?" But I think the greater good is to maintain the sanctity and the expectation of the ability not to kowtow to the rank.
I wouldn't say kowtow. You've kind of hammered home both our points of view there, and I would let them wear it, but if it's not up to scratch, it changes. And which is what I said, if someone's wearing a brown belt, you're bloody hell going to test for pretty soon. have someone come in with a black belt. I'll put them through, it might be in their own style, but I'll put them through some kind of grade to see, are you up to that standard?
All right, Len, here's a hard question for you. You ready?
Uh-oh. You mean the rest of them haven't been hard so far?
Since we've been chit-chatting about it, your experience with me has literally been a 90-minute class,
yeah,
and a year's worth of podcasts.
Yeah.
I move to Ireland, and I decide to go to Blessington, and I'm going to come in and train. Would you make me test for your black belt in your club?
I would ask you, do you want to do our story?
Sorry. Good question. Really good question. Nice. Of course I would say yes. Of course I want it. That's why I'm here. I don't want to come here and take over. I want to come here and I want to learn your style.
Yeah, well, I would definitely let you wear your gi and your black belt in your style until such a time as you're ready for black belt, which I've done with another guy who's come to us, and he stayed in his own gi and his own belt until it was time to test for everyone. And he went immediately for his black belt grade.
And we're completely off topic, by the way, because now we're not talking about talking about aging. We're talking about respecting other people's ranks. So, hey, oof.
Segway.
Okay, let's jump ahead to a different talking point, and let's see if we can stay on topic. Should there be age classes similar to weight classes in tournaments?
Fuck.
Oh, in tournaments.
Yeah, it's okay. Why not?
Yes, absolutely.
There's kids, there's teenagers, there's adults, and then there's over 55s and stuff like that. I don't see harm in it.
Honestly, I think in tournaments that are non-contact, weight classes are irrelevant. I think the only thing that matters is age and rank. When we get into contact stuff like MMA, age becomes, or I think weight classes become more important. But you know what? I attended a tournament a couple of weeks ago in Guelph, which is a medium-sized town here in Ontario. The black belt divisions were not split up by anything other than rank. So it was, if you're a black belt and you're Shodan Nidan, you compete here. If you're Sandan and above, third degree and above, you compete over here. And I thought that was interesting. I'd never seen that before. I'd never heard of that before, that it's exclusively by rank, not by gender, not by age, just by rank. That was weird for me.
Yes, that is a bit odd.
It was a bit odd, but
just
anyway,
by the very nature, to get a higher rank, you tend to be a lot older.
And let me ask you a question. You've run in-house tournaments and that sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
Do you separate by age?
Yeah. I'm within that age then. Particularly for the younger ones, I'll separate by belt as well as the age.
And you know, the other thing that's kind of interesting, when you talk about competing, the whole idea of martial arts is being able to defend yourself and whatnot. So if I'm on the street, I've got to defend against whatever comes my way. I can't pick, but I'm only going to defend myself against people that are over 60 because that's my age group. So when you go into a tournament, you should just fight whoever's there. And if you're not fast enough with them, then you don't win.
And
you know, is there a big deal to win the over 60? So you're the best guy that's old. What the fuck is that?
Thanks, Darren.
I know it is a competitive thing. It's for fun. We're not going out there for an ego boost and all that. But at the same time, like I think you can go overboard. Like when you just said, you know, the 55 to 60 and the 30 to 35 and 35 to 40. Now here, let's just go, you know, from whatever up to 35 and then 35 to 55 and then over 55. And that's it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I don't think it's a...
And that's just to make it fun. It's no fun going in against a 20-year-old that's just going to fucking outpoint you because he's faster and got more
exactly.
I don't enjoy that.
And I think the competitions I've been to where there's 25 age brackets is more kowtowing to the egos of the people competing, because you don't want someone who's 55 competing against someone who's 45 because, oh, they're that much younger. I agree with the broader range of ages. And look, compete because it's fun to compete, not because you're going to get your feelings hurt if you don't go home with a medal. It's the same thing as giving participation certificates to the kids.
Yeah.
Hey, we got 15 kids, first, second, third, and everyone else took fourth. Oh, for God's sakes.
Or as Darren says to me, when you run a marathon, he says, oh, is that your loser's medal?
And actually, it does my heart good because they seem to have done away with this notion these days. You don't get participation certificates, or at least I haven't seen them in tournaments I've been to in the last couple of years. So I think that's a good thing.
I'm going to make one for you when you come to my class in April.
Congratulations to me.
I should have said nothing and just done it.
Here's your participation certificate.
Thanks for coming out.
Can I Mitchell ask a question?
Mitchell be killing himself after the class. I think we're going to bring this one to a close.
Yay!
Fucking asshole.
In the interest of public safety.
Exactly, in the interest of not getting arrested. All right, let's go once around the table. Last thoughts on the notion of just aging and how you deal with getting older. This is, you know what? It's funny. This is the question I really wanted to ask, and it's the one thing we never really talked about. How are we as individuals, except for Lenny, because apparently he's not feeling the age, so...
Peter Pan. Hello.
Yeah, it's Peter Pan over there. How are we dealing with the notion of just getting older in the scope of doing what we love to do and just not being that good at it anymore because we're so old?
This topic is so awesome.
I'll assume you want to go first then, Bob.
Oh, man... So we're all gonna die pretty soon.
Oh my God!
No, really, we are. And how do we deal with that?
I'm only halfway there, man. Leave me alone.
Fuck you.
Leave me alone. Presumably, I'm gonna be 120 before I die.
Presumably, yeah.
Don't hurt your head, Bob. Just focus on the question.
Don't hurt your head.
Don't hurt your head.
Don't hurt your head.
Focus on the question of dying.
The question, fucking guy. Jesus Christ. fucking hell. I can't edit this. Jesus. All right. Thanks, Bob. Let's go on to the next. Oh, my God. All right. You know what? Let's just bypass that question.
I'm sorry.
Just okay, Bob. It's all right. It is a good question.
Answer is fucked.
The answer is fucked. It's a good question. It's the answer that's fucked. All right, look, I'm gonna throw my own little thing on this, and we'll go around. Look, I actively work out. Ironically enough, in the last few years, I've competed in more tournaments than I have on an annual basis in the last 10. It's weird, but it just worked out that way. I'm not aging well. I'm not acclimatizing myself very well to the realities of getting older. And the ironic part about that is because I refuse to submit to the reality of getting older, I work out harder than I should, and that causes more debilitation than I should be putting myself through at this point. And it's a vicious circle of I don't want to slow down, so I'm not going to slow down. But because I'm not slowing down, I have to slow down more. But I refuse to give in to the reality of having to slow down. It's just it's a rabbit hole of inability to concede to the realities of my age. And that's something I stress about and have a lot of anxiety about. I'm not growing old gracefully.
I got to jump in here.
Yeah, Lynn, or Darren,
My first thought was you've just described my entire existence. the same thing, except I don't honestly find it in an age thing. For 30 years, I worked out too hard and then I get an injury and you lose it. And as you said, you got to take yourself back. I remember all of us going in there sick. You used to work out when you had a bad cold and stuff like that. Drag yourself to the gym and do that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the same thing. Like you kind of push through the injuries and it does you more harm than good, and then you're off for a long time. But that's the way it's always been. So I don't know if there's any more injuries now that I'm old, or it's just the same shit. Like, I just don't associate it with age. I just associate it with that. That's the way your body works. Like, loads of athletes' careers were cut short because of injuries. That's just a fact of life. Some people are able to sustain it, whether it's genetics or just the way they trained or just luck. Other people just get injured.
I think the connection for me, Darren, is an injury takes 10 times as long to heal now.
Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? And I have no patience for that, so I try to work out through the injury, which just makes it worse. And it's just a minefield of trying to maintain some level of the ability that I've had through my life into my advancing years. So it's tough. Len, what do you think?
See, I come at this from a very different standpoint than that. 8 years ago. I had a knee injury and basically went for surgery. When I woke up from surgery, things were a hell of a lot worse than I was told it would be. I had lost pretty much all the cartilage in one knee. The other one was degenerating. The meniscus was destroyed. My femur was actually degenerating. And it was too destroyed for a knee replacement. And they were telling me I was going to be in a wheelchair before I was 55. And that was like, what the hell am I going to do now? It subsequently led to me retiring from the Forest Service. But I went to a sports injury guy who Darren has crossed paths with a few times. I'm sure Darren will testify. This guy is just, his knowledge on anatomy and treatment is just phenomenal. But he pointed me in the direction of an alternative treatment. And long story short, a new treatment that was available that basically saved my legs and regrew them, rebuilt them, the bionic man, whatever. So I'm constantly looking for alternative ways to turn around and say, actually, you know what? No, that's not going to happen because there is another way. And if I feel a tweak somewhere or I feel whatever, I'll straight away go and say, okay, let's look into this. What can we do to get around this? What can we do to improve this? Be it diet, be it exercise, be it yoga, be it whatever. And that's my philosophy on it is that, was it Rage Against the Dying Light or whatever it is that freaking line is?
You know what? Honestly, Lenny, Godspeed. And I admire you for that perspective of wanting to keep going and finding out new ways to advance past your challenges. I don't think I'm telling tales out of school to say that sooner or later, that guy is gonna say, you're just getting older, sport.
It's just
a reality, right?
I said that to him once, and he said, don't you ever say that to me. He said, and his answer was, I had a 92-year-old on my table for a rubdown after an Ironman triathlon last week.
Look, we're not talking about continuing to be able to do things as we age. We're talking about the reality of your diminishing ability to do things as you age. And that's the real trick. That's the conundrum here is we want to do what we can do, but we're going to be hampered as we get a little older by what we are able to do.
But I'll fight every step. I'll fight every step
too.
Of the way.
Me too. But my problem is that fight is causing me a lot of psychological anxiety right now, and I'm not sure how to deal with it. All right, guys, let's go once around the table. Last comments on the topic. 20 seconds, Bob.
Holy shit. Oh, Jesus Christ. I'm the old guy looking on from a distant perspective. You guys are great. You're doing everything really well. I can't tell you how proud I am of you. You go ahead, Mitch.
Christ. Okay.
Nice.
I know. Once again, Darren. Last comments.
Oh, Jesus! Talking to sound like Bobby. I'm trying to figure out what to say.
Not so easy, is it?
No, it's not. He's right. I think getting old sucks. There's no doubt about that. You can't do the same things you did before, but it just seems that there's so much out there that you can entertain yourself with. Even in martial arts and stuff, there's so much to learn. You just do it a different way. You just have to accept it once you get over that hump. Like, I remember my dad saying all the time, will you get old, then you'll understand. It's like, look, I'm old now, I understand. You know, it's a fucking hit that point. I still like doing certain things. Yeah, you have to change the way you train, you have to change the things you're doing, but I still enjoy it. Do you know what I mean? You just can't do the same things, but once you accept that, you just can move on and do other shit. As far as the end of the year, I think it was a great year of podcasts, just to throw that in there, and fucking, I had a great time. I'm going to miss over the holidays until you start again in January, if you do keep it up for another year. Looking forward to the fucking 2023 and all the more podcasts again.
Len, last comments?
I won't grow old graciously. Ever.
You're not right now.
And I hope in 20 years' time, when we're all trying to remember, did we just do a podcast years ago? I'm going to say, lads, are we doing one in 2 weeks' time? Because I'm still up for it. To echo what Darren said, you know, it's every couple of weeks we come on this and it's a hoop constantly. And we open, like, we agree, we disagree, we laugh above all else. And I hope to Christ people appreciate what we put in here every week.
You know, I want to echo just my final thoughts, what Lenny said. We're up to about... After a full year of this, we're up to about an average
of... Actually,
it's better than that. We're up to an average of about 60 listeners per podcast.
Holy shit, that's right.
We're not in Joe Rogan territory, but it's absolutely worth carrying on. Again, I wanna urge people to please write in or put a comment.
I was just going to... Do you know what? That was one of the things I was going to say way back when we were talking about the age thing. And it'd be interesting to get other people's takes. Like, even if you don't want to be on the podcast, email Mitch and say, well, I'm this age and this is what I think going in, or this is what I expect, or this is what I think ranks. Because we just are hashing out ourselves, but you never really get the other people's opinions. It'd be nice to know what the average person going through the ranks thinks about ranks. Do they hold them in high regard and all that kind of stuff?
That's an fucking awesome people write point. In.
Not only for be sure. glad to answer, but if you write in with your comments, I will happily bring those comments out and just talk about them on the podcast. You don't have to come on the podcast, but absolutely send your comments in. They won't be ignored. They will
even do it anonymously. It's just like, here, one writer wrote in and said this is what they think about ranks, or this is what they think about.
Exactly.
It'd just be interesting to get perspectives.
For sure. Okay, folks, we're going to bring this one to a close. As always, any comments or questions, please put them on my Know Mind Podcast Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, or an email to knowmindpodcast2021@gmail.com. Guys, thanks again. This one was pretty cathartic for me because I'm having a hard time with the getting older thing. So I'm glad we actually tackled this topic. Thanks so much, guys. We're done. We're out.
Cheers.
Nice one.